Everybody loves this reading from the Gita. It's like we read this reading and we can exhale. We don't have to be perfect after all. But, you know, it starts. I mean, the whole path. If this reading starts with these powerful words. I was just telling some people in the minister's room that I was up in Seattle a few weeks ago giving a seminar, and they have a very different sound system. And it was in my right ear, and it just works very differently. And every time the sound would go out, which it did a lot, I was grabbing my left ear. I mean, the video is going to look so bizarre to everybody who sees it. Why is she always grabbing her left ear? But we just reached there to try and fix it. Okay. Anyway, this reading from the Gita that starts, cling to me, clasp me, these very strong words. It's like when Jesus said, and thou shalt love me with all thy heart, mind, soul, and strength. And, you know, it's a lot to do that. It takes a lot of energy. And so we come to the end of the reading here. And, you know, Krishna keeps sort of saying, and if you can't do that, then do this. And that still feels really hard. And if you can't do that, then do this. And he keeps going. And then that very sweet line at the end of the reading. And if in this thy faint heart fails, bring me thy failures. And we all just kind of go, ah, we're so grateful. You know, because everything else in the Gita, I mean, we're studying the Gita in a book study class right now. And everything else in the Gita, we have to really work hard here. We have to really be good. We have to let go of our egos. We have to serve in the right way. We have to remember that we're not the doer. You know, and Jesus in the Bible, we'll come to it in a couple weeks. Jesus just comes out in four words, be ye therefore perfect. It's sort of like, can we please have a break? What about when we can't be perfect here? But the emphasis here has to be on the word bring. It's got to be on the word bring me thy failures. Not don't worry if you fail. Not you get a pass, you don't have to work. Not like that. You know, Yogananda in his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita on this particular passage, he says, it's so sweet, it's so sympathetic, he says, and so useful in healing the manifold illnesses and suffering of human beings. Isn't that dear? I mean, he calls out the meaning of this, but not by standing still and not by doing nothing. The whole act of even bringing our failures to God means that we have turned towards the light. And that is the important line in this reading. It's really weird. Every once in a while that just happens. All of a sudden, you don't have a thought in your head. I mean, not a thought. It's just the strangest thing. It's like, wow, I've been thinking about this for 24 hours now. But there it went. Maybe it's perfect. I'm totally out of my mind, folks. Just do what we said. Turn towards the light. Everything will be good. There's two very important concepts in this reading also that I want to focus on before we leave it. One is what it means when Krishna says, bring me thy failures. He's talking about our ability to bring our devotion to God, to bring the fullness and the richness of our hearts and to offer it up to God. And secondly, that if we're offering whatever we have to God, wherever we are, turning towards God and saying, here I am, then we're being self-honest and we're being self-aware. And Krishna has given us the ability to do that. He says it in other places in the Gita, where he says a clod of mud, you know, that we can bring him, even a leaf if we bring it with devotion. These are really throughout the Gita. So it says to us, take note of where you are and be real about it and know that if you turn to God with it, he's going to love you. There's a chant that we do very often called, I want only thee, Lord. And for years, I love the chant, but for years, every time we're chanting it, you know, I have this thought back here, like, I'm saying, I want only thee, I want only thee, and then I'm thinking, sometimes I really would rather watch a movie than meditate, or I really do love you, God, and I want mostly thee, can we change the lines, but I still love reading historical fiction, and I always thought this was my little secret. And then one day I was listening to a talk that Gyan Dev was giving, and he said, he talked about this very chant. He said, every time we do the chant, there's a little voice in my mind. It's going, liar, liar, pants on fire. It's so sweet. It's like we are who we are, you know. And Swami, when he introduced this chant to everybody, he looked around the room, whoever was in that room at the time, and he said, this can be scary to chant these words. This is what Swami said. He said, but don't be scared. It's important to chant it. He said, it's not just an affirmation. It's our soul's truth. And we have to chant this so that we can raise our consciousness to our soul's consciousness. It was very sweet. So, of course, we want to be moving. We want to be affirming. We want to be changing our consciousness. But we also need to be honest about where we are. And when I look at how that dovetails with the reading from, with Swamiji's commentary on this today, where Swamiji says to us, I don't have his exact words, but he says, it takes an act of will to be able to see where you really are and to expose it. It's not that easy, he says in there. We frequently want to hide when we err, when we make a mistake. And the other interesting part of it is that all of those states of consciousness, he talks about light and dark, evil. He says it takes evil to see evil, and evil begets evil. It takes light to see light. There's a story of when Swamiji was out for dinner, and there was a couple sitting there. And Swamiji had one other person with him, plus this couple. When they left the dinner, the other person who was with Swamiji said, oh, I'm so glad to be out of that room. He said that negativity between them was just, the tension was so palpable. And Swamiji said, was it? I didn't even notice it. You know, it takes evil to see evil. But the more we see it, it has an energy of its own. It's not just seeing evil. It's negativity, it's desire, it's being greedy. Whatever those things are, they start creating an energy of their own, and we create circumstances in our life that affirms our original thought. So if something goes on and we react positively to it, there's a much better chance that throughout that day, throughout life, our positive inclinations are going to grow. And if we allow ourselves the luxury of reacting negatively to it, then that's what's going to happen. There's a wonderful story in Narayani's book, My Heart Remembers, Swami Kriyananda, about a woman who came to see Swamiji. She was new to the Ananda community, and she felt she was being treated unfairly by a group of people, and she started becoming very critical and very judgmental of these people. And finally, she asked to have an appointment with Swamiji. And he gave her that appointment. And she came in, and she was very emotional. And she was just saying, very critical of these people, very judgmental, in a loud voice and with a lot of energy. And finally, Swamiji says to her, "Stop. I will not allow you to speak like that." He said, "You are way too emotional to be talking about who those people are." He said, "You're going to have to get not just control of your emotions, but of your judgment and of your negativity." And she looked at him and just took a breath. And she said to him, "You're absolutely right, Swamiji. I'm sorry." And then he looked at her, and in a very different way, he said to her, "I'm always praying for you." And she just burst out crying and left in a very different way than when she came in. And when Narayani spoke to Swamiji about it, and she said to him, "She was really able to open and hear you." And just think about how hard that is. You walk into the room, you have your case all together. We've probably all been there. And it's a righteous case. You know, you're making some very good points. And Swamiji just stops you and said, "No, you're too negative, you're too judgmental." But she had that courage to turn around and say to him, "You're right." And he said to Narayani, he said, "You know, what she was saying was the truth. She's been treated very unfairly." He said, "But that wasn't her lesson. Her lesson was to look at her own negativity and at her own judgmentalness." Very interesting. If he had let her go, then that, which Swamiji would refer to as evil in this reading, but that negativity and judgmentalness would just build on itself. But instead, she knew in her heart to stop. There's another wonderful story that I just heard recently that's so relevant to this reading today. And it's from the Indian scripture, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's about a man whose name is, Ajamila. That's what I think his name is. And this story is way too long for me to tell you, but the ending of it is so important, so I'll make it brief. He was born a Brahmin in India, and he lived a very chaste life, and he had a lovely wife who was living the teachings with him, and he was living a good life, and one day he went out for a walk, and he came upon some people who were drunk and who were interacting with each other in not the most scrupulous ways, but they were having fun, or so they thought. And all of a sudden, it looked to him like that was so much fun. So he stopped, and he watched it. And the more he watched it, the more drawn into it he became. Just that quickly, out of where he was in life and into this other way of living, we'll just say. And he left his home, he left his wife, he went and he found a woman who would live a life like that with him, and they had many children, and he became more and more and more unscrupulous in his life, lying, cheating, stealing, just flowing downhill so easily. And he had 10 children, and the 10th child they named Narayana, which is the name of the Lord. And he was very taken with this child, and he constantly wanted to be with him and be playing with him. And Narayana, come and do this with me. Narayana, come and do that, frequently throughout his life, just over and over calling this son to him. And one day, when he was a much older man, he looked down the road and he sees messengers of Yama, the god of death, coming. And he yelled out, "Narayana, Narayana, where are you? Come, I need you now," with great force. And in that instant, the messengers of God, called the Vishnu Dutas, I think it is, appear, and they intercede. And the end of the story is that they save him from death, and he's given the opportunity to turn his life around. And that story is so important because it says to us, whenever we can raise our energy and call on God, when we can offer everything to God, whatever it is, just like the reading in the Gita says, it doesn't matter what it is. He had lived his whole life in a different way, but keeping the name of God there through the love of his son, and at that last moment, calling on God. It's remarkable to me how much time we spend in life holding on to the way that we want to be, even when it's not in our best interest. When all that these great beings are waiting for is the smallest opportunity to enter our lives. I heard a really funny story recently from one of the ministers from Ananda Village who went to New York to do a satsang and to show the movie Finding Happiness. This was some years ago. We're actually about to show it again this next week, but this was years ago when it was first out. And after the movie was shown, there was a woman there at this satsang, at this gathering, who spent 30 minutes fighting with this minister, trying to say, "This is impossible." And he sort of said, "But it's a movie of a place that really exists." She was like, "No, this just can't happen." We're so wed to our ideas. Swamiji says in the reading, what an act of will it takes to hold our errors up to the light, up for the light of purification. And yet we just keep finding ways to stay where we are. They can be so very subtle. And then this beautiful, beautiful story that I just told, where through just saying the name of God, no matter what else has happened. Because you notice in this reading from the Gita, it doesn't say anywhere where you need to be. It doesn't say you need to have made it to any particular place on your spiritual path. It says, "Come to me where you are." That's the beauty of the self-honesty. When we can find that courage to go in front of God, to offer him in prayer, in pronouns at our altar, anything that we can do, and say, "Here I am. This is where I am." But, like the end of this story, we keep turning towards the light. The most important ingredient on our spiritual path and for our spiritual success is turning towards God over and over and over. It doesn't matter where we are now. We have to invite God in. Even if we're, "Divine Mother, how would you like to read this historical fiction with me right now? Come on, we're going to a movie." Whatever we're doing, it can be worse than that. Ask God to go with you. You know what? He already knows. We can't hide. He knows everything about us. But it's in our offering it up that we reach these goals. Darkness has a life and a power of its own, and it will draw you in. But as long as we keep turning back and back and back, then we're going to receive God's grace. then we're going to make it to that goal, ultimately, of spiritual freedom. Because just like what happened with Ajamila, just what happened in that story, that whole life that he lived, but he remembered to call on God, and God's heart opens. He's just there waiting for us to do it. So whatever you're doing in your life, drop the embarrassment, drop the shame, drop the fear. Here I am. This is me right now. And I want you to be with me. I'll accept nothing less than to have you by my side under all circumstances. And so he will be.